This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Called up to the big league, son. Welcome to the show. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Ken Reed what he wanted to talk about in this segment. He said the Edmonton Oilers. Why? I don't understand this Edmonton Oilers obsession we seem to have.
We
around here.
The Canadian public?
No, just in general on this radio station. It's like every time I turn it on, there's somebody talking about the Edmonton Oilers. Why do we care about the Edmonton Oilers? Well, I care. I mean, I care, but...
We care about the Edmonton
stink.
Oilers, I think, because they... are an example to all of us that bottoming out is not always the answer, because that's what they've done and that was kind of their plan, and we'll just pick first overall and all will be well, and they've picked first overall and all has not been well, and it's
really bad. So why what has gone wrong here?
I'll tell you what's gone wrong. I actually did some research again.
Oh, great.
Now this freaks you out. And I heard people in Edmonton talking about how, you know, they've... Obviously, when you draft first overall, it's not all that challenging. It's that they haven't had success drafting beyond the first round. And so I did some math and stuff.
Math and stuff?
Yeah. And players drafted beyond the first round by the Edmonton Oilers, that's where you get your depth, right? That's where you get your good second, third, fourth line guys that are going to make you good, that are affordable guys, that are going to play, you know, under term for a long time. Since, here we go. I wrote it down. Are you ready, Bob?
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Going back as far as 2007, there's only one player on the Edmonton Oilers this year that was drafted by the Edmonton Oilers after the first round that's on the roster this year. It's Martin Marincin. He's played in 12 games. He has one assist. So basically, if they don't draft you in the first round, you're not going to play for them. And that is no way to build an organization. You have to find guys in round two and round three and round four if you're going to have any depth. And I think that's one of the major problems. So may I say scouting?
Well, I guess. I mean, that's your inference, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, and there does seem to be some statistical evidence to support that.
Yeah, poor drafting. Yes, statistical evidence. I dug it up. So, I mean, you can bottom out, and usually who you're going to pick first, it's usually, you know, it's not that big of a challenge. We had the Taylor-Tyler debate in 2010, but, I mean, with Hall or Sagan, you weren't really going to go wrong. But it's who you get later in the draft that you know, adds depth to your organization, so... I think that's where they've been hurting a lot.
Do they have to make change?
Oh, yeah. They have to do something quick, don't they? They need to pull off a Calgary Flames, Toronto Maple Leafs, Gilmore-type trade. Like something, a lot of bodies moving, which are not the easiest types of trades to pull off anymore.
So who's a candidate?
I'd say I would trade anybody but Taylor Hall.
No. I'm saying what team would be a candidate?
Man. Well, that's just it. Who wants those parts that can't make it work in Edmonton? We keep hearing David Perron is on the market. David Perron has two goals. Who do you think is chomping at the bit for David Perron? And if you trade David Perron, who are you going to get back that makes a difference?
Well, nobody.
Yeah. I think you just got to load up a bunch of players and ship them out of town, but that's a difficult thing to do. Well, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Who would want these used parts? But I know there are just tons of teams that would want these young guys. You know, Hall, Eberle, Nugent Hopkins, Darnell Nurse, guys like that. Tons of teams would want those guys, but would the Oilers part with those
guys?
All
right, well, let me throw a couple names out.
Mm-hmm.
San Jose.
Sure, they'd want some of those guys, wouldn't they? They have to. They're ultimately their main core is getting a little older.
You need a team that's in a bit of a mess.
Well, and you need a team where the young guys coming in are going to have to complement the group that they have, because, I mean, clearly the young guys in Edmonton can't do everything, and they don't have a lot around them. So if they, you know, say there's a big swap with San Jose, well, there's some players in San Jose that are pretty dang good players. So, you know, they'll have something to work with outside of the first line.
What do we got?
What do you got?
Blues president and general manager of hockey operations Doug Armstrong announced that goaltender Martin Brodeur will practice with the team starting Friday.
The Blues.
That's interesting.
Is interesting, because I thought Jake Allen was doing a pretty steady job there backing up. Maybe was Brian Elliott pulled, or was he injured last night? Injured. Okay, there you go. Because then Jake Allen came in, because they had, I think it was a 2-0 lead on Ottawa. Sens came back and won. So there you go. I thought it might be the Avs that went looking for Brodeur, given their goaltending woes of late. But St. Louis, wow.
Elliott is listed as week to week, not day to day, week to week.
That makes sense then.
Now, I saw him walking down, like, he got hurt, and then he was, they sent him to the dressing room, and I saw him whipping his stick or something.
Yeah, I saw that too.
And I can't remember what did he hurt. Do you remember what he hurt? Anybody know?
Was it a crash in the crease? Is that when it happened? I'm trying to think.
I don't remember.
So, yeah, I mean, I like, you know what? I like Jake Allen a lot. He's a goalie that St. Louis has taken their time with. But their window's pretty short, so. But no, I shouldn't say their window's short, but, like, they have a good team. So if you're going to win now. And man, Martin Brodeur going there, that's really, really interesting.
Leg injury, we're told. There you go. So who else would Edmonton want to deal with?
I think Edmonton would want to do a deal with just about anybody.
Well, no, but...
But it's if they wanted to part with these young guys. It's obvious who everybody's salivating over.
I'm getting all that. I'm trying to figure out what team would be in the market. Phoenix? I don't know about Florida.
I would say that any team would be in the market for a good young talent that they think they can make better. And you know that every GM and coach in the National Hockey League thinks they can make good young talent even better. The thing is, do you want to trade Nail Yakupov, and then Nail Yakupov ends up scoring 45 goals somewhere one year?
One of the things Edmonton needs is a goaltender.
They maybe should have been calling Mr. Brodeur.
Well, that's my exact point.
Hard to win with Ben Scrivens and Victor Foss. And that, did you see that knuckleball last night that went in on Foss? That was pretty good.
Well, happens.
Yeah, but that happened from the red line.
Yeah.
When you're the Edmonton Oilers and that happens, that just sucks the life out of you. Sorry about this Oilers obsession here at the station, Bob.
Well, no, it just seems to be an obsession with them. Neil Smith is going to join us in a bit. As a former general manager, maybe we'll ask him about it. Leafs in Pittsburgh tonight, looking for a third straight victory. I don't like their chances, to tell you the truth.
Well, Sid and Malkin pretty much feast on the Leafs historically, so that's not good.
You wouldn't think so if you're a Leafs fan. Meanwhile, the Raptors will try and run their streak to 6 in a row by beating the Hawks tonight to go to 13-2.
And that should be doable. What do they get for a basketball game in Atlanta now for a crowd? Every time I see highlights from Atlanta, it doesn't look too good.
I think this time of year, 11, 12,000 maybe.
It's not very good. That doesn't look cool.
Well, no, but I mean, that's what the NBA is in a lot of markets.
Yes, very true. Yeah, so it's funny. The Raptors shouldn't have a problem at all. And it's funny, the Leafs have won, 2 in a row? And I don't think no one has much faith in them going into Pittsburgh.
Well, but there's no confidence. You know, I don't think people have confidence in them. You're hopeful. If you're a Leafs fan, you're hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have confidence in them.
And you know what? As much as it's been so up and down for the Leafs and so crazy, and as crazy as it's been, when you look at the standings, they're in seventh place in the East. So we're at the quarter pole, and they're in seventh place. Not too shabby. Because probably most people picked them to be in that 7 to 11 range anyway, so they're kind of at the top of that range. So they take a lot of heat, but...
Who's Columbus got as their backup goaltender?
Columbus has Bobrovsky and...
McElhinney?
Is it McElhinney? Or is he in... Yeah, it's McElhinney? Okay. And they're the only guys who aren't getting hurt in Columbus this year.
I'm just trying to find a match for the Edmonton Oilers. You know, it's interesting. You know, I've said since the beginning of the year, they got to start moving some of these parts.
Well, Bobrovsky could work going to Edmonton, perhaps. You know, you could do that. I don't know what his contract status is right now, but you could do that.
Why?
Because they need a goalie.
Well, I know they need one. Well, why would you give him up?
I don't know. I mean, here's just the thing with Edmonton. They're not dealing from a position of strength. So that's what makes it so hard to pull off a good trade, because everybody knows you're so desperate. They're in sweepstakes.
Well, that's why you've got to deal with another team that's desperate.
So what do you get from desperate? But that's the thing. What are you going to get? What's going to work?
Well, change for the sake of change sometimes. And what do you think you're going to get from these deals?
I don't know. There, Bobrovsky, 5.625 for this year and next year. And this year. So you get him in there, but do you really want to give all that cash to a guy who's maybe going to walk? So it's tough, man. It's tough.
Well,
Dallas?
Restricted after this year?
I'm looking around here. Dallas?
No, Dallas is fine.
New Jersey? Jersey's 11th in the East.
Yeah, Jersey might be interested.
The Caps, maybe, but, I mean, if you're Edmonton, it's so scary because you built this whole team based on we're going to have the number one pick, and we're going to pick all these guys, and it's all going to be well, and so then you do that, and it's not well, so do you abandon your whole plan? Do you blow it up again? Man, fans in Edmonton, they deserve a winner, and I keep hearing the A word out of Edmonton, too, apathy, and that's terrifying to think that...
Who's
that
apathetic?
Fans, and that fans in Edmonton could be like that because they're so good and they care so much, but you can only take so much.
Slide on over here, Smith.
Here's a guy to ask about what to do,
There's
Bob.
So much I can take myself.
Bring your microphone over here, please. Get closer to me. Get right up close here, Neil.
There's only so much I can take, you know?
So what would you do if you were in Edmonton, if you were the managing general there?
First thing I'd do is buy a jacket, because I don't think I have one warm enough.
It's cold. I've lived there. It's chilly.
You know, and I talked to him about this, but he thinks that Scrivens was a number one goalie. And
based on what?
I don't know. But that was his feeling, was that Scrivens is better than Faust, and Scrivens could be their number one. I don't think anybody else thought that. And all the good teams are built from the goaltender out, not built from wingers and centermen back.
Is that all they're missing?
Oh, no, they're missing defensemen, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you got to start with a goalie, because you have a good goalie.
Well, that's what I think,
and everybody gets confidence out of that.
That's
what Bobrovsky did for Columbus. You were talking about Bobrovsky before. He's done that for Columbus. He won the Vezina. I mean, what's been the problem with the Philadelphia Flyers for the last 25 years?
Goaltending.
They've never had a goalie to make them feel confident that they can do what they got to do.
So, Neil, if you're Edmonton and their management structure, they kind of gambled on this whole, okay, we're going to tank it for a couple years and we'll have good picks. What do you do now? Because this isn't working. Do you blow it up now?
You can't blow it up, but I think you've got to strategically find ways to put in quality veterans. And the one thing that I heard you guys talking about that I've heard many people say, and it's a very logical thing to say, is you don't want to trade Yakupov and then have him go someplace and become a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think that way as a GM, then you're stuck in
you're never going to move anybody.
You're paralyzed forever.
Well,
because
yeah.
You're afraid that you might lose your own job. You've got to, when I traded Tony Amonte, Doug Waite, Nordstrom, we did it for the reasons for what we needed to do, what we had to do. And whatever they became on Chicago or Edmonton or L.A., you know what? That's the way it was. But I couldn't be thinking, oh, my God, if I trade this guy and he turns into a star, I'm going to get fired. Or I'll look stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll look stupid doing something else anyways. Mm-hmm. I won't have to wait for that not to work out.
No,
you know what I mean,
no.
though? There's always going to be something that's going to make you look good, something that's going to make you look stupid. But you have to do what's best for your own team.
Right.
What did you see? I don't know if you caught any of the Oilers game last night, but I mean, there's that awful goal from center ice. There's that goal Sagan got where it looked like a change you'd see in men's league. The guys on your men's league team would freak out, led to that breakaway for Sagan. It seems like things are happening to them that happen to a team that just doesn't have any swagger or mojo or any confidence. And if one little thing goes wrong, blows right up.
That's exactly how they've been all year. And when things are going good, it's a whole different team that's on the ice for those couple of periods, maybe a whole game, like when they were in New York and they beat the Rangers. They had a full game of playing well. But as soon as something goes bad, you're right, they just blow up. Their confidence is shot. And when I talked to Aikens about the team, he said to me, if we could just get average goaltending,
yeah,
and he says we'd be okay, but we can't get that. We always let in at least one to two really bad goals a game, and it kills the bench. The bench just sags.
Marty Brodeur is going to practice with the St. Louis Blues. My guess is Marty Brodeur wouldn't have gone to Edmonton.
I don't know. You know what? Beggars can't be choosers.
Well, no, I get that. But he had indicated, I saw a conversation with him, I guess at the beginning of the season, where he suggested that he didn't want to go where he didn't have a chance to win. And you can't really go to Edmonton and think you have a chance to
win.
No,
you can't. No, you don't. But it depends. If that's your own personal criteria for how you're going to come back and play in the league, then you know what? Good luck. But at his age and his level of playing at that age now, I don't think that he should be thinking he can be a number one on a winning team. Do you know what I mean? Like, and here's one thing.
Well, I don't think he thinks he's going to be number one, but he wants to be someplace where he can win. Or part of a winning organization.
Yeah, well,
chance to get a cup.
And don't we all?
Well, yeah. No, I get that.
But here's the thing I want you to, I don't know if you caught this last week. Do you remember that Corey Schneider mm-hmm. played goal for New Jersey 21 straight games or 20 straight games,
yep.
breaking Brodeur's record for the most consecutive games to start a season?
Mm-hmm.
As soon as he broke the record, the next game they put Clemenson in. Now, if that isn't a smack in the face to Brodeur to say,
take
now
that.
There's one record gone.
Is that coming from the top of the organization?
I don't know, but it's really funny that you go 20 straight with Schneider, and then as soon as he breaks Marty's record, you turn on the TV and Clemenson's in net the next game. But he wasn't in the first 20.
I might be the only one of Marty's he can break, though. So,
well, true.
Give
but
them
I mean,
that.
They say there was some bad blood there at the end when Marty left.
It's kind of sad to think there would be. Just going back to the Oilers, I want to know, as a former GM, what kind of calls would Craig McTavish be getting right now? Would guys be just salivating, thinking, man, I can get something out of this, because he's desperate?
Yeah, of course they would, but it's probably less calls than I would have got in my time when there wasn't a cap, because
yeah.
now it's more difficult to make a trade.
Right.
But he'll be getting calls and saying, what are you looking for? And he'll say, let's say he says, I'm looking for a goalie. Well, they'll say, do you like, my guy Jones? And they'll say, yeah, I do. Well, would you give me Eberle and Hall for him?
Yeah.
Click.
Thanks.
No. But that's what you get. You get absurd proposals when you're weak.
Interesting, though, that you bring up Martin Jones' name, because he's a guy I made the link to Martin Jones, though, but maybe there's a fit, Bob, for a goalie for the Oilers, because, I mean, Jones is a guy who's stuck behind Jonathan Quick, and chances are he's not going to get much playing time, much like Jonathan Bernier.
Yeah, I was going to say,
we've seen that movie.
Right. So maybe that movie plays out again, you know?
Yeah. Well,
I don't know. I mean, what's the result of that movie? I mean, what is Bernier?
But what could Jones be?
I mean, I don't know if that's the guy you want. I mean, do you want to take a shot at a guy who hasn't played hardly at all?
To me, what Edmonton should be doing is trying to find a guy. It's easy to say
yeah.
find a guy. Trying to find a guy who's been a number one, who can be their number one. You know, like, I don't know who, but, you know, and I'm sure Ryan Miller had no intention to go to Edmonton when he went to Vancouver, but had they been able to talk Ryan Miller into going to Edmonton, just to think about it for a minute, they certainly wouldn't be in the position they're in now.
No. No.
He alone would have won them a number of games.
I was going to say at least four or five more.
Yeah. They were close enough in games that he would have won them himself. But their goaltending, and Scrivens and Faust, have not won them one game yet. by themselves. Like games when you come out, you really shouldn't have won, but your goalie stole it.
Yeah.
Well, they've got the opposite. They've got a number of games that they should have won, and their goalie gave it away.
Yeah. That's tough. That is tough. And the other thing, too, is, I mean, to me, when I look at them, I say, man, they got to pull off like a Gilmore deal, like the Leafs and the Flames did. But how do you do that now in a cap world? How do you swap nine guys at once or seven guys at once?
I asked Kenny earlier, like, what teams are you talking to? Like, who are you having conversations with? Okay, maybe, you know, maybe it's not a goaltender. Maybe there's no goaltender out there right now that you're willing to give up one of these kids for. And I could see that. But if you're going to pull off a deal and it's going to be a one of some significance, who are you talking to? You're talking to other teams that have troubles. Aren't you?
Usually, yeah. Unless you're telling somebody that's up at the top there that, you know, you're ready to be pilfered. So if you want, I'm ready to move Yakupov, give me your best offer. And then it's a strong team that says, wow, we could have another Tarasenko here. Why don't we?
Well, I mentioned San Jose. Yeah. I mean, there's a team that's, is probably thinking about what do we got here? Is the window closing on for us?
Right.
And is it time to make moves? I mean, that's the kind of team you're looking at, aren't you?
Yeah, I would think so.
Phoenix, maybe? Buffalo's got nothing.
No. And Phoenix doesn't have
that. God bless them. They're playing okay the last couple of weeks, but, you know.
And Phoenix doesn't have that much, really, either. Then they're so strapped financially that they're hard to make a deal with.
Yeah.
And they already took Sam Gagner in that three-player trade from the Oilers. So, I mean, geez.
Well, Columbus has, been hurt all year. We're going to talk more about that with John Davidson in a few minutes. You wanted to take a couple minutes and talk about your friend Pat Quinn.
Yeah, it's sad because I was in here with him, with you, trade deadlines, and it was really sad. When I heard the news, I was just blown away. I didn't have any idea that he was that sick, and so it really had an effect on me because I would talk to Pat we weren't living next door to each other, but I would talk to him every month or two or three and see how he was doing and talk about what he was going to do or what I was going to do or hope to do or this or that. And he had an impact on everybody that knew him in hockey and everybody that knew him at all, whether it be negative to some people or mostly positive to most people. But he was certainly one of a kind. And I'll tell you a Pat Quinn story that I took power skating when I was very young. My mother was huge on skating, knowing that skating could make you into a player. You had to skate, right? So I took power skating from a guy named Ron Wild at Tam O'Shanter on the curling rinks. That's where he taught it in the summers. My mother took me back session after session after session, pay for them. And there was a guy out there playing junior hockey or just had gotten to the Leafs trying to learn how to skate better and keep up. It was Pat Quinn. And me and him were on the ice together. And, of course, I, at that time, him being 11 years older than me, I thought, he was like this. He was going in the NHL, and here I was probably playing midget or something. Mm-hmm. But I have often reminded him of that story, and he remembers the whole thing about going out there. Mm-hmm. And my mom would, every time she would see him, she's gone now too, but she would say something to him about, oh, remember you were with Ron Wild and all that? And he would laugh. And him and Sandra, his wife, he's from Hamilton, and Sandra, Pat and I, our mothers were all born the same year. So whenever I would see him too, I would always say, how's your mom doing? Because his mom lived to an elderly age. I'm not sure if she still is with us, but I found that really fun too. There was a lot of personal stuff that you could talk to with Pat. And then I made several trades with him, one of which was hilarious when at the an expansion draft. You could only protect one goaltender in the expansion draft of I forget which year it was. Anyways, I had Van Beesbrouck and Richter. So nobody was giving me anything for Van Beesbrouck because they knew I was stuck, right, that I had to expose one of them. And I wasn't going to expose Richter because he was younger. So I called Pat and I said, Pat, you don't want to lose your backup to Kirk McLean, who was had played in Peterborough. I'm sorry, I'll remember it in a second. And he says, no, I pardon me?
Kluche?
No, a Peterborough goalie. Whitmore.
Oh, Kay Whitmore.
You don't want to lose Kay Whitmore, right? And he says, no, I don't. I said, well, I've got a way for you not to lose him. I said, why don't I trade you Van Beesbrook? He's going to get taken for sure by Florida because Roger Nielsen's coaching the team. And then you've lost your one goaltender. You can't lose Whitmore or McLean. And he says, well, how do I know that they're going to take him? And what if they don't take him? I said, well, if they don't take him, then you can trade him to Mike Smith in Winnipeg, and I've already got a deal done there. You get, and Mike Smith will send me his goalie. Again, I can't remember the name right away because I've already got that worked out. All right, well, then if they do take him, what am I giving you? And I literally took the piece of paper that we had that showed who has been protected and who was let go, and I said, give me Lidster. Just give me Lidster because he was a guy that they – was on the verge of maybe not being protected or protected. And he was an old, not old, but older player. Well, he says, well, give me a few minutes to talk about it. And I said, Pat, it's 10 to 12 and the deadline's at 12. You got it. We got to do this. He doesn't call back. 4 minutes to 12. Luckily, this was before the days of the paperwork and all that stuff. Yeah. I said, Pat, are you going to do it? Well, I said, it's 3 minutes. Why wouldn't you do this? I said, there's no downside. If he gets taken, you've protected your guys. If he doesn't get taken, I swear to you, you can ship him off there. And okay, then I'll do it. Well, guess who was on the ice for the Rangers on the final buzzer against the Canucks to win the cup? Doug Lidster. So it was funny. But that's the way Pat was. Like, he wasn't a real trusting guy. Like, I mean, he wasn't going to say to you right away, oh, well, Smitty, I've known you a long time. I know you wouldn't screw me.
Yeah.
You know, let's do that deal. He was like, well, what am I going to get out of this? So it was, I've often told that story right in front of him when we did those trade deadline shows. But Pat was a iconic figure in my mind. I mean, even now, like, I just picture him behind the Leaf bench still. And I was not a kid picturing that. Like, I picture him behind the Philadelphia Flyers bench for the 35 straight wins. And, the thing that he got into, remember when he left LA and went to Vancouver and fined by the league because he signed a contract and
they
stuff.
Wouldn't let him coach, right?
Was right, that the deal? For a little while,
Yeah.
And then he, you know, he was in Vancouver and then he came here and I guess, and then he was in Edmonton for what?
Did you ever try and get him?
A year, season.
Yeah, no, I did try to get him to coach, to replace Colin Campbell. Because you've got to do everything cloak and dagger when you fire a coach during the season because you don't want to hurt anybody and you don't want it to get out and all this. So I'd called Pat and I knew him from working with him with Team Canada and he had just been let go by Vancouver. And I asked him if he was interested and his hip was really bad and he couldn't go on the ice or something, he said. So that put the kibosh on that at the time.
Oh, really?
I would like to have worked with him. And I would have worked with him here, remember, if I'd gotten the job over John Junior. Remember what's between me and him?
Ferguson.
Yeah. And he got it and I didn't. But if I would have been working with Pat, Pat interviewed me for that job.
Really?
And which is ridiculous. The coach interviewed the GM.
Wow.
To see if he wanted the job.
I wonder if you got that job, if he would have ended up staying, you know?
Well, I've said that to him. I said, I think you probably would have had a better chance to survive if I'd been here. And you know,
I think so too, Smitty, now that I look back at it.
But he
did he vote for you?
Pardon me?
Wasn't that the triumvirate?
Yeah, it was Ken Dryden, him, and
Richard
Petty. And so, I don't know how Pat thought about me. All I know is a hilarious, another great story if we got time, is I go up and I do this, you know, very cerebral interview with Ken Dryden because he's such a,
well,
you know,
cerebral guy.
We have this long interview and he says, well, now you have to go down and see Pat Quinn downstairs. You know, because he was down in the dressing room. And he walks me to the elevator, pushes the button in the elevator, and gets back out again. Like, what? What is this? The elevator takes me down, drops me off. The hallways are completely pitch black. I don't know where I'm going. I finally walk along. I see the big chrome doors with the maple leaf on the front. Because I was living in New York at this time, so I wasn't used to the ACC like I am now. I see the big chrome doors. I'm like, how do I get in here? Where's Pat? It's all dark out in the hallway, right? I finally stumble around the hallway and find a house phone, like the hotel's. I call up and I get the girl at MLSE or upstairs and I go, could you please tell Ken Dryden, this is Neil Smith, I'm downstairs and I'm supposed to see Pat Quinn, but I have no idea where he is. Like, how do I see him? I guess they called down and then Pat came out. But that was the rift between Dryden and Quinn. Like, Dryden wouldn't, well, wouldn't take me down
really?
And hand me off to him. I had to find it on my own. They had no part of each other.
Those that two. Bad,
eh? They wanted no part of each other. And I'm thinking, do you really want to show an outsider that it's this bad? Like, you know.
Wow.
So I found that kind of comical, though. And then Pat interviews me, and his interview was, Smitty, how you doing this? You know, we're just talk small talk. I don't really know what to ask you, but he says, yeah, I know you. What are you doing last year? TV, right? And I said, yeah. He says, well, you're pretty critical of us and the way we lost in the playoffs. So he says, why do you think we lost? I said, first of all, Pat, I wasn't critical of you, and I'll tell you why. Because I was doing ESPN, and I never was at one of your games. I was doing the series out west. I was out there the whole time. I don't know why you lost, how you lost. So I said, I wasn't critical of you at all. Oh, okay. But well, he was a funny guy. Had his defense, had his defenses up, you know,
yeah.
Ready to go.
Yeah. Nice to see you as always. You working tonight?
No, I'm not. No.
A night off?
Tomorrow night. Back at it.
Back at her.
Are you having turkey tomorrow?
If I can afford it, I'm not sure.
God. Neil Smith of the NHL on Sportsnet. More hockey talk when we come back. John Davidson will join us. This is Primetime on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Now, Primetime is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Before the hour, Primetime Sports continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks. Bob McCowan, Ken Reed, Don Banks of SI, and Bob Nicholson, vice chair of the Oilers Entertainment Group. A little bit later on.
You cold?
No, it's just, you know, Nick's a pal of mine.
So you don't want to talk to him about the tough times in Edmonton?
Well, I'm interested in what he has to say, obviously.
Are you a strong and objective journalist, Bob, who doesn't let friendship get in the way of hard-hitting
questions?
Well,
no, I'm not going to let it get in the way. But, I mean, when you've won 1 point in the last 7 games.
I know, you got a feel for them.
And definitely. 6 of them were at home, I think.
Winless against your own conference.
Yike. Hey, listen, our next guest is probably not really sympathetic to the plight of the Edmonton Oilers. The president of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Here's John Davidson. JD, how are you?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Good, thank you.
We're all right.
Good.
How are things in Columbus?
Well, things in Columbus are a little bit interesting, for sure. It's been a tough ride for us, no question. The club has gotten into a bind with our injuries. It's not an excuse. It's a fact. And it's really derailed what we expected to be. You know, we went 7-1 in preseason, which doesn't mean a lot. We started the season 4-2, and in my opinion, it should have been 5-1. And then we got hammered to the point of almost exhaustion with the amount of injuries. We still have 5 or 6 or 7 guys out, and we're just trying to muddle through it and survive. At times we play well, at times we don't. We're giving up 4 goals a game, and that's not going to win any games. About that simple.
Has it been goaltending, or that's just a part of it?
No, it's everything from A to Z. It's primarily when you have $32 million in salary sitting on the sidelines for a number of games just because of injuries.
Yeah.
It's you're taking, bringing up people from the minors, putting them into positions, moving guys from fourth line to second line, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Everything's out of balance. We haven't been as good defensively as we should be. That's a fact, too. But I honestly think if we were a healthy team, like a good number of our teams in this league, we'd have a decent record, much, much, much better record than what we have. So I sit here with our hockey group, and we try to analyze exactly where we are and what we have. It it's awfully hard to figure out where we are with what we have. Mm-hmm. And so we're not going to run out and do anything foolish trade-wise. That's just not going to happen because we need to find a way to get this group back to health and then see exactly what we have and go from there.
The expectations were pretty high, I think, in Columbus.
Yeah, and deservedly so, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that at all. It's good. You have to deal with them.
How is your fan base responding, though?
Actually, they've been very, very good. I mean, I think that for the most part, we've done a nice job here rebuilding the season ticket base, et cetera. It's gone really well, but the fans have been, from my point of view at least, very, very understanding of the situation, at times very frustrated and should be, but the understanding is pretty good. I think I'm actually quite impressed with our fans with the way they've dealt with this whole thing like we have. They've been supporting us. They come out. They look for good things, and they've been remarkably supportive, very, very supportive.
John, you mentioned you want to stay patient, not pull off any crazy trades. I think it was 136 man games lost to injury for you guys before you took on Winnipeg last night. How do you stay patient through something like this?
You have to deal with it. I mean, this isn't a case of a hockey club that's, I mean, nobody stays 100% healthy, even though you look at a team like Pittsburgh and up until the Dupuy injury, they've been pretty good. But you expect a certain amount of injuries. You have to deal with your depth, et cetera. We were the youngest team in the season, going into the season in the league. And then when you get hammered with anywhere from 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 of your players out, we had 3 of our 4 centermen out, we had our goalie out, we had 2 of our top 4 defensemen out. I don't know what you can expect. So you expect to play hard. You expect to maybe steal points here and there. That's been hard to come by. But you've got to gather your thoughts and say, okay, this isn't because it's a team that's badly coached. It isn't the team that just doesn't have talent. This is a team that hasn't been given a fair chance to show what they have. So with that being said, we who are in charge, you deal with people like when I was in St. Louis, that was a 7-year rebuild, and it was torturous at times. And we would have town hall meetings with season ticket holders, great fans, because the fans there when we were there. So there, and at first it was only 4,000 or 5,000 fans, but they were there, those people, and they watched the team come in as with young players, and watched the rebuild happen. We weren't fortunate enough to be loaded with money, so you could go out and make mistakes or, you know, do whatever you had to do. We had to do things through the draft and build that way, and that was it. But a lot of times some of the fans would say, well, why don't you trade a first rounder or one of your first rounders and bring in somebody that's in the 30s and maybe can help us and do this and that. I said, I understand what you're asking for, but I'm being paid here to rebuild the franchise.
I think our
patience paid off in St. Louis when you see where they are now.
Definitely. Are you getting calls from other teams that are maybe looking to get something out of you guys right now?
Yeah, Yarmo's our general manager. He talks to teams every day, and that's that sounds like a cliche, but it's the truth. We talk to teams every day. There's nothing imminent. Everybody talks about what their needs are and what they're willing to try to trade, and usually at this time of the year, that isn't something that makes a lot of sense. Generally, when you get into trading in this league, it's either at the trade deadline or just prior to it, or it's at the draft. That's when the majority of trades do happen. And during the season trades, as you can see over the last number of years, there isn't very many. So, I mean, you're always constantly looking, always constantly trying to think. I can say this much, that if we make a deal for this team, I know we added Leopold, a defenseman from St. Louis, because we were down to using our 12th, 13th defenseman in the depth charts of our franchise. So we needed somebody, and Leo came in, and he's been good for us. But we just needed to find an NHL player that could help us back there. That was after the Fetter Tootin injury, who was a good defenseman for us when he tweaked the knee, and we've been told 4 to 6 week injuries, so we needed to find somebody.
I want to take a couple minutes and just get your take on this Jack Johnson story. Did you have any idea what was going on? I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, we had some. It's been a very, very tough situation for Jack. I wouldn't wish this on anybody. I don't know the exact details. A lot of that type of business is private business. I've been supportive Jack, and certainly as a franchise, trying to help him get through this whole thing. And I think that with Jack, when you're really close to your family since childhood, it's even a more difficult thing to go through. This isn't like going through something where there's some agent out there who's taking you to the cleaners. Like we have seen, I go back to the days of that Richard Sorkin on Long Island, back in the early 70s.
Right.
There's been some bad guys out there that really are bad people. This situation, I can't really get into it. I don't know enough to say, and I've read a lot about it recently for sure. But this is just a really, really difficult situation. The one thing that for Jack is hockey is a sanctuary. The locker room is a sanctuary. The workout room where he goes in and lifts 8 million pounds of weights, that's his sanctuary. So with teammates who are terrific, with the whole hockey thing, it's going to have to be a long ride, but I think he'll get through this thing.
Well, the good news is he's still young, wouldn't you say, J.D.?
Yeah, exactly right. When he gets into the further years of his hockey career, and touch wood, he stays healthy, he's going to, if he plays the way he's capable of playing, and it can't be easy trying to play with a fresh mind or a relaxed mind. It's got to be difficult. But I think along the way here, if he can find a way and get support and then, you know, he has more earning years left ahead of him to try and get himself settled and set for the future of his life.
Yeah, John, what gets me about this is, I mean, obviously teams and leagues have, you know, educational conferences, whatever, for rookies coming into the league. But how do you get around something like this? Your own parents doing something like this to you. It's very heartbreaking for me when I read this, and that's what gets me is like, how do you protect somebody against their own parents? And that's what it looks like this situation is.
I can't imagine. I just can't imagine. And again, I don't have the specific details, and I don't know who did what or how they did it or whatever, but it certainly is a difficult situation. I think that what could be interesting here is along the way, when these tragedies happen, you look for some kind of good to come out of it. Maybe there's a way where the Players Association gets involved and they have checks and balances that the players and the agents can go through with finances somehow. I know everybody has their own personal business, but somehow when you put your trust into other people and whether it's investments or whatever it is, who checks them out? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm getting at?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's something that can come out of this thing is everybody in those positions can put their heads together and try to get something good to come out of this thing.
Yeah, having said that, we got to go. But having said that, as you indicated, JD, you know, you can't trust your parents, you know.
Mm.
Well, listen, better luck. It's been a rough ride for the last little while, but hopefully you get healthier as the year progresses. And who knows, maybe you can pull a rabbit out of the hat.
We did it last year. You never know.
You never know.
This is a deeper hole already, but I do appreciate it. We're not... We're a club that's going to be going forward. We've been hit with a tsunami here. We have to deal with it. That's just what it is. You got to deal with it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for joining us, John Davidson, okay. The president of the Columbus Blue Jackets, and again, Jack Johnson. Files for bankruptcy back in October, after his parents essentially ruined him financially.
How do you prevent that? That is absolutely insane. Absolutely insane.
When we come back, Don Banks of Sports Illustrated will join us. Lots of football tomorrow. It's
three games
on U.S. Thanksgiving. We'll talk about those and the weekend coming up. And the vice chairman of the Oilers Entertainment Group, they're winless in their last seven and in, it would appear, desperate need of some sort of change. Is it coming? Bob Nicholson will join us. That's coming up when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.